Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
And it's actually a federal requirement that students are coming out of school and they're not being able to demonstrate what they learned. So we've got this thing now where every program, like mine is a marketing program, has to have a series of program outcomes, and then each class in that program has to have class outcomes. And then we had to create assessment exams to assess those particular outcomes and make sure the students understood those at the end of the semester. So as I explained last week, we're kind of doing the same thing here, and then our program outcomes are in the back of your bulletin. Let me just grab one. And the program outcomes are the five unity principles that you see in the back of your bulletin. So throughout the talk, I'm going to at times name which one of what I'm saying actually is a program outcome. So the idea is that, you know, we want to really be able to understand at a deeper level what it is that we are, you know, learning each week. So with that in mind, what we're doing this week, we're still exploring the depths within our own being. Trying to understand the truth of ourselves. Who are we really? And today we're going to use, the basis for today's talk is going to be found in the story of Job, in the book of Job. And it's extremely important that we do not allow ourselves to get stuck in the literal interpretation of this story. How many people are familiar with Job, the story of Job? Okay. If you're not, it's, you know, where Job, you know, is very, very wealthy. He's got, you know, 7,000 cattle, 5,000 sheep, you know, 3,000 goat. You know, he owns all these things. He's got 7 sons, 3 daughters. In other words, the man is doing well. He's like the Jeff Bozo, is that his name? Bezo. Yeah, it's like the Jeff Bezos. How many people know who that is? Yeah, the richest man in the world now, right? And so, you know, then, you know, God has his angels come to him. They have having a little committee meeting. And one of the angels is Satan. And so Satan says, you know, I've been, you know, so God says, what's up? And he says, well, I've been, you know, back and forth on the earth. And your boy Job is doing pretty good. He says, yeah, you know, he has a lot of faith in me. So Satan says, but, you know, if you took away all that stuff, would he still have faith in you? God says, yeah, you know, I think he would still have faith. So, you know, Satan says, well, give me permission to take the stuff away and let's see if he still has faith. So that's kind of the deal. All right, that's kind of what the story is about. All right, but it's considered, the book of Job is considered one of the great books of the Old Testament. In the book Understanding the Old Testament by Bernard Anderson, he quotes Martin Luther, the great monk and Protestant religious reformer, saying that Job is magnificent and sublime, meaning exalted and heavenly and glorified, as no other book in Scripture. Alfred Tennyson, the English poet, called it the greatest poem of ancient and modern times, and Thomas Carlyle, the Scottish historian, declared that there is nothing written in the Bible, or in the Bible or out of it, it is of equal merit. So there's a lot of, you know, understand that Job is one of the great books. And it's written in the book Diagrams for Living by Emmett Fox, which a lot of these talks have come out of. It says, the book of Job is really a study in the origin of evil and a study in why things can go wrong, okay? And then Dr. Fox says that the book of Job asks the following question. Why do we have pain and suffering? Why do we have sorrow and regret? Why do we sometimes say or do things for which we are terribly sorry afterwards and worry about how we're going to handle the problems we created? So that's sort of what Job is answering. Now, many of us have heard the expression, the patience of Job. Who's heard that? Okay. Now, this holds true for Job in the prologue, which is the introduction to the story. Hold on 1 second. Can we get that turned off? because I noticed some of you say you can't hear when that thing comes on. All right. So anyway, so this holds through the patience of Joseph. He's very patient, of course, in the prologue, which is the introduction to the story, and the epilogue, the conclusion of the story. And these parts, of the ancient story are written in prose, or what they call ordinary common language. The main part of the book is a poem, and here Job is anything but an example of patience. Okay, so according to the story, Job was put to the test by Satan to test his faith in God. Okay, and as you're listening to this whole thing, I want you to understand that this really is a story about all of us. All right, so he's put to the test by Satan to test his faith in God. Now, in terms of reading scripture, just pure logic and reason, coupled with what we have studied about God, does it make sense for that which is infinite and all-knowing to have any reason to test that which is finite and in truth an aspect of itself to know whether or not we have faith in God? You know, so does it make any sense for, you know, yes, you're reading, that's what it says. Thank you. Yes, you're reading, that's what it says, but you got to ask yourself, does that really make any sense from a logical standpoint? So it is a literal allegory that's trying to get a point across, all right? Now, as I said, you know, program outcomes. This is what I'm getting ready to say now applies to program outcome number 3, which is number 3 on your 5 unity principles. I think the idea we need to give consideration, a considerable thought to here, is that we are each made in the image and likeness of God. So the creative formative power that is the activity of God is the very same creative formative power that resides in our inner being, or the true self of every one of us. So that which God can do as a creator, we are also what? Co-creators. We have that same formative power of mind. And that's a really important point for you to grasp. You have the same formative power of mind. So whatever you hold in mind, thoughts held in mind do what? Produce after their own kind. The Alpha and the Omega, the thought becomes the thing. Is that making sense? Okay. So we must also, in our own way, come into the understanding of God love that Jesus taught us about. And so God love, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, all of these are the same because there is only one power and one presence, okay? So we must also realize that this one power and one presence we call God is absolute, infinite, universal, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent being, and as such is impersonal, selfless, unconditional, pure love energy and constant motion in every aspect of our lives. Were you already keep up with that? Okay, right. So the word impersonal means that God is never judging. God is always just being. And what is God being? Impersonal, selfless, unconditional, pure love energy and constant motion. That energy does not judge, it just is. Does that make sense? Okay. So, but as soon as we begin to personalize God, even with the word God, we extract our subjective, finite perception of God out of the universal whole that God is. In other words, to us, God becomes He or Father or whatever other word we use to shrink the absolute down to what we can understand, okay? So it's only when we seek an undefined, unlimited connection through spiritual communion that we begin to comprehend the completeness of God and thus begin to awaken from the dream of separation. So whenever we say He or God or whatever, it's sort of like this thing is separate from us. You follow what I'm saying? It's only when you have slipped into that pure state of meditation that you connect with the allness of God is. And everybody here has done that at one time or another. You know? And it's interesting because when you slip into it and then your ego pulls you out of it, you go, oh, geez, how can I get back to that? And you don't know how to get back to it because you don't know how you got to it in the first place. I mean, you know, you've heard me talk about the beta, alpha, theta, delta states of consciousness. Beta is what you should be in now. If you slipped into alpha, you're not in this room anymore. You've drifted off somewhere. Okay? But when you slip into that alpha state of consciousness, that's when you begin to have the ability to connect with the allness of God is. Okay? So in the words of Einstein, we want to awaken from the optical illusion of our own consciousness. Einstein, awaken from the optical illusion of our own consciousness. So the heart of Jesus' teachings is to bring our awareness into the light of understanding that knows the truth that God is. So when it appears that some super being is challenging us with his might, we will know it is not God. Rather, the challenge is to our peace, our prosperity, our wholeness, our loving relationships, is not knowing and not understanding how to tap into the power of our own indwelling divine potential, the potential which is God-like in each one of us. And without our inner knowing, we are subject to our own delusions. All right. The reason why I'm asking you, because even after I wrote this, I went back and read and go, what? What am I saying? All right. So the key here is we always want to stay open and receptive and not categorize and define what is happening in our lives. I don't want to go through it again, but remember the story about the farmer where, somebody stole his horses, ran away, that's bad, and then his horses came back, that's good, and bad, and good, bad, and good. And he kept saying, every time somebody, oh, that's good, or that bad, he goes, I don't know, it just is. So it's sort of like getting into that mindset of saying, no, it just is. So God is never challenging or testing us. Rather, it is we, and seeking answers to the questions we have about our life's purpose, who are challenging and testing ourselves. So the metaphysical answer to the question, what is the meaning of life, is God is the meaning of life. So if God means love to you, then for you, love is the meaning of life. However, if you see God as a punishing God, then for you, punishment becomes a meaning of life. You get it? See, God just is. But when we start to define what's happening in our lives, we are defining what God is in our lives. All right? So, and this is a program one and program outcomes one and two. The answer to the question we all have, which is, why am I here? Now, you have to stay with me on this, okay? So the answer to the question we all have is, why am I here, is because I am is here, meaning God is here. I am the eachness of the allness, the individual expression of the God idea. Therefore, I am here because I am is here. And if I am here because God is here, then I must be here to express love, life, wisdom, and so forth that God is. Did that? Or you want me to say that again? Okay, so the answer to the question we all have is, why am I here? Is because I am, capital A, is here, meaning God is here. I am the eachness of the allness, the individual expression of the God idea. Therefore, I am here because I am is here. And if I am here because God is here, then I must be here to express life, love, and wisdom that God is. That's why I'm here. So if somebody says, what is the meaning of life? The meaning of life is for me to be an expression of that which God is. Not the delusion of my own mind. Not the perceptions of my own mind. Is that you with? Is that? Okay. And again, what makes this difficult is that that's not what we've been hearing all of our lives. What we've been hearing all of our lives is to react to what is happening in the world. Or react to what is happening in our lives. And now we're saying, no, that's not why we're here, to react. We're here to be what we are. And what we are is an expression of God. And that expression shows up as life, love, and wisdom. Now, the answer to the question, and this is program outcome two, the answer to the question, who is God, is, of course, I am God. Meaning, I am the I am that God is. As Jesus expressed, I am he whom God has sent, or I am she who God has sent. I am the one that God has sent to be the expression that God is. Is that okay? And in the who, in the question, who is God, is asking for a personality. When you say who is God, you're asking for a personality. And I am the personality through which God is expressing. Who is God? I am God. I am the personality through which God is seeking to express. But if I'm busy doing my thing, God can't do God's thing. Does that make sense? All right? So the question we must constantly ask ourselves is, am I, by my beliefs, words, and actions, choosing life, love, and wisdom? Or am I, by my beliefs, words, and actions, choosing the frustration of continuous trial and tribulation? Am I choosing this experience? Okay? Now, a lot of times we'll say, oh, no, I would have never chosen that. But, you know, the old way of thinking, the old, you know, down-home way of thinking was either God's doing it or the devil's doing it. And now we're understanding they're not doing anything. It is me through my misperception of what is happening in my life. So in the dictionary, the opposite of tribulation is blessing. If what is occurring in your life appears to be a blessing, you must realize that there is no God who chooses to give you this special blessing in this particular moment. That's scary, isn't it? There is only God, that is the divine force in the universe, that is omnipresent as the blessing of life, love, and wisdom, and we are the ones who have the power to choose life or love or wisdom any time we want it. So there's no God saying, oh, you've been good, let me give you a BMW. Oh, you've been bad, let me take it away from you. Okay, remember I told you before, that's not God, that's Santa Claus. Okay, so that which God is always being. So when you want that BMW, whatever that symbolizes in your life, when you want that, you merely have to choose it. But you have to choose it with all your heart, mind, and soul. You get it? It can't be a haphazard thing and say, oh, I wish I had this. But in your heart, mind, and soul, you're struggling with issues that you just can't get out of your head. And who knows what I'm talking about? I know what I'm talking about. Right? The stuff is going on in my head while I'm white writing this talk, and I'm going, why am I dealing with this? All right? And I had to find a prayer which worked out for me was, you know, reveal in me with that which needs to be revealed and heal in me that which needs to be healed. And that helped me to start to let go of it. All right? So we're all struggling with these issues, but the key we have to understand is we are doing this to ourselves. God is not doing it. The devil's not doing it. We are the ones who are doing it. God, meanwhile, this wonderful life we're looking for is right there for us to just take and embrace, okay? So likewise, if what is occurring in your life appears to be trial and tribulation, I just want to say there is no God who chooses to send some critter called Satan to disrupt your life, because there is only God that is the divine force in the universe that is omnipresent as the blessing of life, love, and wisdom. And it's you and me, I don't know if it's you and me or you or I, you English people, who in a moment of challenge, right, make a choice. It is you and I who make a choice between love and fear. We make a choice between selflessness and selfishness. We make a choice between spirituality and personality, between blessing and tribulation, between awakening or remaining asleep, trapped in the dream, the optical illusion of our own consciousness. We are the ones who make that choice, okay? And it explains in the history that Job had 7 sons and 3 daughters, all of whom were taken away. Now, there's a great metaphysical significance to the number 7 and what the 7 sons symbolize. First of all, the number 7 is universally used and recognized as a mystical number. It is felt that it must have some fundamental significance in the natural order in the universe. Okay? So 7 is a number which represents the fullness or wholeness in the world of sensation or materiality. So like 12 is a number that represents wholeness in the universe. 7 is a number that represents wholeness within your own personal life, okay? So 7 represents the perfection of divine law within each one of us. So our 7 centers consist of our 5 senses, seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, feeling. To those, we need to add intuition and telepathy. That's our 7 centers, okay? So how many of you have experienced having thoughts and find out thoughts of somebody else and found out that what you were thinking is exactly what they were thinking? Okay, right on, it's like right on the money, okay? However, the purpose of telepathy is not to eavesdrop on each other, but listen to this. The purpose of telepathy is a way of tuning into the omniscience or wisdom of the universe. The purpose of telepathy is to tap into the mind of God. That's why it's one of your 7 centers, okay? So the key here is if you don't understand that you even have that power, then it's like you don't even have it when you do have it, okay? So our problems do not lie in the senses themselves, but rather our problem lies in what we have spent our lives concentrating our senses on. And here again is one of those statements that contradicts the whole normal phenomena of the intellect, because the intellect goes, well, no, I was using the 5 senses for what I'm supposed to use them for. Right, but the intellect did not have a clue that it was concentrating the development of the senses in the wrong direction, because the direction it chose is the direction that everyone else who was influenced by race consciousness chose. So we just said, yeah, that's how I'm supposed to use it, right? But if you're into martial arts at all, and you have Netflix, you should watch the movie 100 Eyes, okay, with this great martial arts monk, Kublai Khan couldn't control him. He kept escaping. So to control him, he took away his sight, took away his eyes, all right? So in the beginning, the monk, you know, he cried and he wailed because he lost his sight, but then he remembered his training and he slowed down and he was in this one little room and he began to train himself to not need his eyes. And he became so proficient at being able to function at a high level of martial arts without his eyes that when Kublai Khan brought him in front of him and said, you know, I'm sorry I had to do this to you. And he said, don't be sorry. He said, you gave me a gift because you took away my 2 eyes, but now I have 100 eyes. That's what we want to do. We want to increase our senses to such a high level that we're functioning beyond just what we thought they were for. Does that make sense? So now you can see God where nobody else sees God. You can hear God where nobody else can hear. You can feel God when nobody, you get what I'm saying? Okay, and that's why Jesus said, let him who have ears to hear, hear. He wasn't talking about just hearing each other. He was talking about hear the mystical works of the universe. Is that making sense now? Okay, so Jesus called the misguided use of these 7 centers the Son of Man. The way we use our centers, he said, that's the Son of Man. And he said, don't destroy them. He said, just learn how to lift them up to the Son of God. That's all right? I think I'm more impressed with what I'm saying than anything. Because, you know, it's a lot of study to come up with this, and you kind of like understand what is this really saying, all right? So if we forget the main purpose of something, it is equivalent to not having this capability, or in biblical terms, it is as if it was taken away from you, okay? So this is what was meant in the story when it said that Satan took Job's 7 sons away. Satan is the deceiving phase of mind in each one of us that has fixed ideas that are in opposition to truth. Satan thoughts are the adversary of spiritual thoughts. And it's a simple thing. When you get in a situation and you say, you know, I really should come from love here. But your own inner dynamic says, no, I am angry. I'm not coming from love. That's the Satan thought. That's the adversary. That's taking away from you one of your sons. You get it? Okay. So Satan is the devil, which is the state of mind we have created that supports ideas of personal power, completeness, and sufficiency apart from God. And remember, Jesus said clearly, apart from God, I can do nothing. But our ego says, no, apart from God, I do my thing. This is what I do, right? That's the Satan activity, right? So the Greek translation of the word devil means accuser or the critical one. The Metaphysical Bible explains that the one word in the English language which most describes this idea of being an accuser or being a critical one is personality. Is that not mind-blowing? Because our personality is all wrapped up in judgment and accusing and criticizing. And then somebody says, why are you doing it? What do you mean, why am I doing it? You do it. So the activity of an entity called Satan or the devil and the activity of a personality God are the images we made up in our own mind. There is no personality God. There is no anthropomorphic being. There is only that in which I live and breathe and say it with me and have my being. All right? And then Jesus said it clearly. He said, it's not here, no there. It is in the midst of you. It's in within you. So in effect, it was Job, not Satan or God, who took away his seven sons or seven gifts because he took his focus off God, meaning that which is spiritual and divine within his own being. Okay. Now, likewise, his three daughters were taken away. They represent spirit, mind, and body. These three, by their spiritual nature, are one. So if mind and or body are not in harmony with spirit due to the concentration on outer distractions, the wholeness is broken or taken away. All right, so spirit, mind, and body, the three daughters, okay, they have to operate as one. Okay, if one or two of them are off, then the whole is off. Okay? So it is for us to use the power of mind to focus our energy on the love, life, and wisdom of spirit that dwells within us as our beacon of truth. So when we lose track of our purpose, our reason for being, we turn away from spirit and disharmony and trial and tribulation result. So when stuff happens in our lives, when we have this Job experience, we have to be able to hold on to the truth. There's a story, this person used to come speak here probably way before many of your times, and she was just a beacon of spirituality. Tall, she was about 6'3", 6'4", and just a beacon of personality, a beacon of spirituality. Here and at the college, I mean, she was just a wonderful individual. And she got really sick. And I called her up to see how she was doing. And she cursed God with every word you could possibly imagine. Wanted to know why, when I do so much, I've done so much for God, God has made me sick like this. And she ritually passed away, angry with God. That's the Job experience. You get what I'm saying? All right? And it can happen to any one of us. And you know what? It has happened. Who has had the Job experience in their life? All right? It has happened to us. Okay? I mean, I tell you the story of Pam and I losing everything in our lives twice with two little kids, 4 and 2 years old. Everything. House, car, everything. Nothing left but each other. All right? Right? We laugh about it now, right? Okay. But, you know, we've all had that happen to us. Even, you know, I can just think back when, you know, you're in a wheelchair and my arm, and I'm trying to, I know you heard that story, we're trying to push her down the road. I got one arm in a sling and she's in a wheelchair. Right? And we hit the sidewalk where it was going like this. I'm like, I won't lose you, hon. I got you. And we laugh about it now, but yeah. So, but you know, we need to look back and laugh now that we know better. You know, now that we know that nothing, no universal thing did this to us. We had the experience and we had the ability to get ourselves out of the experience, you know. And it's good to know that, because when it happens again, you can go, oh, yeah, no, I'm not going that way. I'm not doing this, okay, and be real clear with yourself. So this is just, again, the story of some, this is not just the story of some poor fellow who was taken victim, who was a victim of a cosmic experience, but rather Job is a story of every one of us. And in the book, Understanding the Old Testament by Bernard Anderson, again, he gives this representation of Job. He says, the concrete portrayal of the hero Job is evident enough that the poetry deals with the stuff of daily experience, with human life as it is lived in history, and yet the author raises a historical question in such a way that has universal relevance regardless of one's social background, historical milieu, or religious tradition. He's just saying, this is just everybody's life. All right? So I'm going to leave you to contemplate the question, materiality or spirituality, which will it be for you? One keeps you trapped in a dream of separation from God, as Einstein called it, the optical delusion of one's own consciousness, while the other will eventually guide you to awakening to the divine truth within you. So the question to constantly ask yourself is, am I willing to do the needed prayer work, asking the Holy Spirit to help keep me awake to the divinity within me? Okay, and I want to end with this again from January Science of Mind. I know this is February, but January Science of Mind, this is January 27th. I told you that every single affirmation in your January Science of Mind had, it started with, the divine good fulfills me, always has, always will, and I access it every day. I love that. The divine good fulfills me, always has, always will, and access it every day. And it goes on to say, new insight comes to me from every direction. Through the vast, infinite, compassionate mind, I love and value every opportunity of awareness to expand my awareness of the divinity that exists within me. So it's saying everything that happens is for my highest good. And so it is. Amen.